The housing stock here is so old, and when it gets upgraded, you get priced out, especially if you don't have Section 8.
We've had like almost 30 groups staying with us in the past 6 months, and we haven't had any issues with anyone.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode, we're featuring entries in our special series on housing. Access to affordable housing is no longer associated with the abject poor and homeless. It's a problem that affects low and middle-income workers and their quality of life. As part of our special series, we're looking at housing and how communities and governments across the region are addressing what's become a crisis for municipalities across the country. WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley examines what Burlington, Vermont has been doing this year after the mayor called for concrete action in his State of the City address.
Affordable housing is becoming a crisis in Vermont. Vermont Housing and Conservation Board Executive Director Gus Selig says Burlington and surrounding Chittenden County mirror statewide problems.
The problem in Chittenden County is that there is a shortage of supply, and that applies to other places in the state too. The Upper Connecticut River Valley around the Hartford area has a very tight housing market. Montpelier has a very tight housing market. In other places in the state, there's a real issue around quality of housing, and it's too expensive for what it is. So there's a range of problems. And in general, people of modest means just can't cover the costs.
The City of Burlington finalized a housing action plan in 2015, drafted following the release of a 2014 Downtown Housing Strategy Report. That 2014 report noted, quote, "The lack of market-rate housing development over the past decade, particularly in Burlington's downtown, has created supply constraints that further exacerbate increasing housing costs," unquote. Old North End resident Mayumi Cornell says low-wage workers like her are being priced out of Burlington.
I work on Church Street, and a lot of the people I know can't afford to live in Burlington. If they're college students, they have to have four or five roommates and live in little. The housing stock here is so old, and when it gets upgraded, you get priced out, especially if you don't have Section 8.
The city's housing plan described an affordability crisis with, quote, "severe supply constraints, rising home prices, and escalating rents that are further impacting affordability in a market where a typical renter household allocates more than 44% of total income to housing costs, significantly above that of other cities," unquote. The Housing Action Plan outlined 22 proposals in five categories, including strategic application of municipal resources such as the Housing Trust Fund and revisions to inclusionary zoning, reduction of regulatory barriers, new strategies for student rentals, new approaches to homelessness, and creating appropriate senior housing. 2 years later, Burlington created an inclusionary zoning working group that presented recommendations to the City Council in July 2018 after reviewing a consultant's study of its inclusionary zoning law on 20 years of projects. It offered three scenarios to move forward and added recommendations such as dealing with affordable housing and college housing, parking requirements, and income standards. During his April 2019 State of the City address, Mayor Murrow Weinberger said the city must redouble efforts to tackle the housing crisis.
The shortage of housing has become our largest social challenge as a region and as a country. Building a wide array of homes, from more housing for the chronically homeless to more market-rate rentals, is the solution to many of our key issues and concerns. When we create more homes, we are taking a step toward a future where housing is a human right.
The Democrat added the city has been pursuing a two-part strategy over the past 7 years, continuing to build as much permanently affordable housing as possible, along with policies and proactive efforts to create more homes for households of all backgrounds. The mayor says the second strategy included a study of apartment vacancy rates.
During the years 2006 to 2011, the city produced only 67 new apartments and had an average vacancy rate of just 0.7% during that period. Over the past 7 years, the average vacancy rate more than doubled to 1.5%. Now, let's be clear, 1.5% is still too low. We'll need to see sustained vacancy rates of twice that or more to get to our affordability and inclusion goals. However, these trends of increased new homes and rising vacancy rates refute the idea that new housing supply doesn't matter and should be seen as a call to more action.
The mayor hosted two housing summits to address policy and regulations as developers worked on increasing housing in the city. In June, the first summit brought together advocates for low-income people, developers, housing stakeholders, and the president of the Minneapolis City Council, Lisa Bender. She described efforts by the city of about $430,000 to address affordable housing. It has a 2% vacancy rate compared to Burlington's 1.5%. Bender said the two cities have similar issues and challenges.
I think our story shows what happens when a community comes together around its values and starts asking some deep questions about what's working today and what isn't, and what are the risks of staying with the status quo.
Mayor Weinberger hosted a second summit in September, which collated work conducted over the summer. He outlined what he labeled progress, but some residents began heckling him.
I think we're starting to see that in the data. That's great. That's what tonight is about.
We can't afford to live here without Section 8. It's the only way we get heard.
It pains me to hear that you feel that's the only way you get heard.
Burlington resident Charles Winkleman was among the hecklers and holding a sign saying, "Renter." He claimed the mayor and city officials are not paying attention to the real needs among low-income residents, labeling the housing summits a farce.
It was really a sham because our government doesn't work for the 60% of Burlington residents who are renters. It works for the landlords, for the developers, it works for the homeowners. To make a legitimate and meaningful amount of low-income housing, we need to be investing millions upon millions a year in social housing that is owned by the municipality. I did research at the last two summit events, and only 25% of the folks who were there were renters in Burlington, even though we make up 60% of the city. And even a smaller percentage of those were low-income renters, even though they make up 25% of the city. And so he's taking a consensus of folks who have money.
On the practical side, the city celebrated the opening of a new 76-unit affordable housing building in the city's New North End. The average rent at Laurentide Apartments is about $1,000, about $500 less than fair market rent in the area. Mary Plouffe is on Social Security and says she would not be able to live elsewhere without a Section 8 voucher that lowers her cost even more.
Where else could you go for 200-something a month? You can't. You can't. You can't find nothing like that. They pay for the heat, and they pay for central air. And so we pay rent and lights. That's it.
Standing nearby was another resident of the complex. Rihanna Hustis was initially skeptical that Laurentide would actually be affordable, but with a Section 8 voucher, she applied for an apartment.
I'm right here in Burlington. I'm not like right in the center of downtown, but I'm close by, close enough so that I just hop on a bus and I can do and go wherever else I want to go, and it's just a lot easier. I came from Shelburne Village. That's the last place I lived, and it was hard commuting, and just makes more sense just to live here.
Adjacent to the Laurentide building, new units are being created as the former Champlain College is refurbished and rebuilt. It's part of an effort to create 800 new homes in an 800-acre site just north of the center city. At the same time the construction was occurring, city councilors reviewed regulations that might impede construction of or access to affordable housing. At its October 7th meeting, the Burlington City Council approved a resolution to adopt a series of housing policy reforms that were a direct result of the summit. Lead sponsor, Ward 5 Democrat Chip Mason.
These four proposals can be summarized as follows. The first calls for an updating of our standards for energy efficiency and rental housing. The second proposal encourages the creation of accessory dwelling units. The third proposal asks to consider implementation of a regulatory framework for short-term rentals. The fourth proposal seeks to revise the city's approach to minimum parking requirements. The final proposal asks to consider the restoration and increase in the city's level of funding in order to support the Housing Trust Fund.
At a December meeting, the Burlington City Council took final action on one of those four items. It approved on a 10-2 vote a charter change, which now goes to voters, to increase funding for the Housing Trust Fund from a half cent to 1 cent per $100 of assessed property value. Ward 1 independent Sharon Foley Busher says the trust fund has directly generated more than $6 million and over $30 million in supplemental investments in affordable housing.
To me, you don't only look at the dollars that you're asking the taxpayers to pay, but understanding that that then is expanded significantly.
Councillor Mason warned it will be a controversial ballot question.
I'll be supporting this because I believe it furthers this council and administration's commitment to affordable housing, but I did hear from some constituents who are feeling this is yet another tax increase if it goes through.
Vermont Affordable Housing Coalition Coordinator Erhard Manka notes that the network of nonprofits can only produce affordable homes based on available funding.
And at the federal level, much of that has been cut and slashed over many, many years. If I look back to the late 1970s, which was a high point of federal funding, there's been a devolution and disinvestment by the federal government over many years. Senator Sanders was the original sponsor of the first new affordable housing program in over 20 years, the National Housing Trust Fund.
Some low-income individuals distrust the ongoing efforts by the city and advocates. Albert Patarka was at the second Burlington Housing Summit.
This mayor is engaged in a project that is a pro-gentrification project whose goal is to socially cleanse the city of people like me. So they're building up, but they're building up into an ever higher market value for the people who they want to now import into the city at the expense of the people who built the city, the poor, the working poor, the working class.
Burlington has inclusionary zoning ordinances that require 20% of new housing downtown and 25% along the waterfront must be affordable. Some audio in this report is courtesy of Channel 17, Town Meeting Television. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
Well, as the use of short-term rentals like Airbnb grows in Berkshire County, so too are efforts to regulate their use around the region. WAMC's Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landis has that story.
The official conversation around short-term rentals in Lenox, Massachusetts began in spring 2017. Multiple meetings, 2 years, and three drafts later, the town finalized its bylaw on the topic in November.
Short-term rentals, they hit upon a lot of community planning issues that people are very passionate about.
Gwen Miller is the land use director and town planner for Lenox, a town of about 5,000 residents with multiple cultural institutions that swell the summer population. She says the short-term rental conversation has been going on in the town for almost all of her 5 years on the job.
People were seeing homes in their neighborhoods become not just a single-family residence where, you know your neighbor and you might be friends with them or not, but you know who's there, it's the same family, you're comfortable with them. But they were seeing these homes turn into, you know, an Airbnb or a VRBO, and they no longer really knew who was next door all of the time.
But the conversation isn't just about knowing your neighbors. It's also about money and the way it could reshape the culture of Lenox, which borders the county's largest city, Pittsfield, to the south.
In some cases, a property was being or could be purchased not by a family who intended to live in town, and, you know, send their kids to the local school or volunteer for the fire department or volunteer for a town board or committee, but a home might be purchased for the express purpose of being used as a short-term rental.
Miller says the burgeoning market could test Lenox's housing supply.
Where already home purchase prices are relatively high.
Then there are the local hotels and inns.
Who have invested a lot of money over the years in adhering to the local zoning bylaw, but also the building code in making sure they're a safe lodging option for guests. They felt like there was a big inequity between how they're treated through the building and health code compared to how a short-term rental property does not have to meet the same code requirements.
They should be regulated the same way that hotels are. So in other words, they should be taxed accordingly. They should have the same safety in place. They should have the same fire codes in place. They should have to pass the same safety reviews that all of our hotels have to pass, and they don't. And that's where the struggle is.
Janet Eason is the vice president of Main Street Hospitality, which owns four hotels in the Berkshires, including Hotel on North in Pittsfield and the historic Red Lion Inn in Stockbridge. She says despite the regulation issue, for the most part, the hotel industry has come to terms with services like Airbnb.
We've made them our partners rather than our enemies, and I think that's true in all of our hotels. We have some inventory we think of them really as another distribution channel. We have some inventory out with them, not a lot, because they haven't technically solved their integration with kind of key property management systems that hotels use, but I think it's just like another Expedia or Booking.com. It's another place for us to get the word out on our properties. They have a different kind of consumer who's looking for a different product.
When I personally am, you know, looking at Airbnb, I'm looking to save some money. When I'm looking at a hotel, I'm looking to treat myself. And we really try to lean into those things that make people feel like they're treating themselves.
Colleen Rafferty is the guest experience manager at Tourists, a hotel in North Adams that opened in July 2018, well after the short-term rental boom.
We're sitting in one of our rooms right now, and as you can see, it is very clean. It is everything has been curated very carefully. If the motto of Airbnb is, isn't it nice to be home wherever you go? Our motto is, isn't it nice to be out of your home?
I'm not an Airbnb person. I would never stay in an Airbnb.
Oscar Hallig rents out a room in his South Egremont home as an Airbnb. He used to run an actual B&B and says the tensions between the hotel industry and short-term rentals aren't as fraught as they would appear.
I like to go to a hotel that has a name I recognize, a long hallway with a door that I get into with the key, and they give me some sort of points when I leave.
Short-term rentals are using your home, your property, to have a different opportunity to bring economic independence to your life.
Airbnb policy team member Kelly Gossett. She says the company views its rentals as a part of the gig economy that should be treated differently from commercial properties.
This is primary people's homes. That's where they live the majority of the time. They're just using this option, this platform, for another use.
In December, the company, which brought in over $1 billion in revenue in just the second quarter of 2019, announced it had remitted $2 billion in tourist and occupancy taxes by the end of the year. Back in Lenox, the conversation around regulating short-term rentals brought up internal weaknesses in the town's existing bylaws. Again, land use director and town planner Gwen Miller.
We did have a very vague, open to multiple interpretations zoning bylaw, which made it difficult to review the whole concept of short-term rentals or enforce any of the interpretations of the bylaw.
The town's first attempt at a bylaw failed.
The first proposal that went to town meeting in 2018, many voters saw as too strict.
Pamela Kieber chairs Lenox's planning board.
The planning board, I would say, was taking a very conservative view with that version of the bylaw about protecting the interests, the residential character of existing neighborhoods, and about protecting the housing supply.
The first version required a special permit for all short-term rentals of entire houses and required operators to be town residents, ruling out second homeowners. As Massachusetts refined its own laws around the topic and the Lenox Planning Board held meeting after meeting, the town ultimately crafted a successful bylaw, only after a second draft also went down. Kieber says the third final bylaw breaks down into three basic parts.
The short-term rental of rooms, short-term rental of entire dwelling units, and then general requirements for both.
Up to two bedrooms and dwelling units can be put up for rental year-round, as long as the owner or tenant is living in the home. Entire apartments or homes without the owner in the house, which Keeper says make up the majority of the area's short-term rental market, can be rented up to 75 days per calendar year without going before the Zoning Board of Appeals. A special permit can extend that to 110 days.
There also is a requirement that if there are multiple dwelling units on one parcel, that all those numbers apply to the parcel, you know, not to the units themselves. And again, that has to do around kind of controlling for intensity in primarily residential neighborhoods. And I'll kind of underscore again here that one of the key purposes of the bylaw is to protect and maintain the residential of character of existing neighborhoods, at the same time wanting to enable residents to earn money from their properties. So it's kind of finding that balance.
The last part of the bylaw requires adequate parking on properties. No events that would require tents or permits in effort to avoid so-called party houses, and no advertising signs. The ultimate Lenox zoning bylaw around short-term rentals is just the second of its kind in Berkshire County, following neighboring Richmond's. Now, other county communities are formulating their own policies. C.J. Haas is the city planner of Pittsfield, the county's largest municipality with around 43,000 residents. He says the city is lying low for now, while keeping an eye on surrounding communities and issues like overcrowding.
We've had one or two instances, with rentals that have come up, generally related to parking, because maybe a residence was rented to have a party or some sort of event.
It's a tricky one because, unlike, you know, particularly places in Eastern Mass, because we are a community that is smaller now than we were built for 100 years ago, we do have additional housing stock. But what that stock gets used for is the question.
Tom Bernard is the mayor of North Adams, a small city of around 13,000, about 30 miles north of Lenox.
If people are investing in property and improving them, that will improve the valuation of the community, that will improve comps and housing values. But that, you know, you also have that concern on people about affordability. So the, you know, your home is the biggest asset that most of us have, and you want to see it appreciate, but there's a tax implication to that as well, and it's a tricky thing to balance.
A good portion of our population have a real housing crisis, and there are way too many people facing housing instability, and that is driven in large part by the economics.
Brad Gordon is the executive director and staff attorney for the Berkshire Regional Housing Authority. He says wages in the county are already inadequate for many residents to find housing as is.
What we've seen in the larger urban areas, and I'm afraid we'll see some of that here as well, is that there'll be people that will come in and invest and buy up properties and then utilize those properties for these short-term rentals, further exacerbating that market demand and driving prices up, and that would be really unfortunate.
He says it hits extremely low, very low, and low-income households in the county particularly hard.
That respectively is 30, 50, and 80% of the median household income in Berkshire County.
Gordon says that around 1 in 3 households in the Berkshires rent their permanent housing.
What we know from the National Low Income Housing Coalition, as well as through the most recent data through the American Survey, is that about close to 50% of those households are rent burdened. That means that they're paying in excess of 30% of their income for the rent.
That measurement is commonly used to indicate housing stability. If you're paying above that 30% line, it indicates instability. But Gordon doesn't think it's the most accurate way to depict the kind of need extremely low-income households experience.
Households that are at 30% of median income, which is probably somewhere around $16,000 a year in annual income. And if you have a very minimal amount of income to start with, 30% of that still may put you in a situation where you're facing housing instability. And I think for our population in Berkshire County, probably around 23% of our population in Berkshire County falls at or below 30% of median income.
That's just over 29,000 people. Gordon says the kind of people looking for short-term rentals are nothing like the region's most vulnerable.
Those are typically people that are going to be vacationing, or maybe they're using it for a short-term business trip. But where those the dynamics of a rental housing shortage and short-term rentals intersect is that it's just simple market economics. That is that there's less units on the market if they're being utilized for short-term rentals, and just having a shortage of available rentals drives the price, you know, just simple market economics drives the price of rentals up overall.
Gordon says short-term rentals aren't the only factor driving up rents in Berkshire County, but they're part of the problem. He says those rising rents hit low-income residents the hardest.
If you look at the FMRs, the fair market rents, for a one-bedroom, it's a little over $900. For a two-bedroom, it's about $1,100. For a three-bedroom, it's over $1,300. And for a four-bedroom, it's over $1,500. So when we're talking about folks that are somewhere between 80 and below median income, that alone, that market rent, presents challenges for those households.
He says the Great Recession that rocked global markets about a decade ago created a new paradigm for housing.
In Berkshire County, we saw an uptick of about 3% of people renting, but that's significant when you have a shortage. And I think it's just people's response to kind of the new economy after the Great Recession, where people didn't feel like they had long-term job stability, and they wanted to have the flexibility of being able to move if they needed to, and which is harder to do if you're a homeowner. And also the reality is for younger folks, especially millennials, they're burdened by student loans and other things that make home ownership less accessible to them. So they have been driven into the rental market more than maybe some predecessor generations.
Despite his concerns, Gordon isn't strictly against short-term rentals.
For some folks, especially in South County, where we know taxes in some of the communities are a little bit higher, and people may be on fixed incomes there too, it may open up an income opportunity for them so that they can actually keep their permanent housing. That's a good thing, and it may create, you know, in some ways create some economic stimulus in those communities as well that benefit other people.
He says that laws should be crafted in such a way that differentiate between those offering short-term rentals to survive and those strictly attempting to profit.
So maybe it's looking at owner-occupied situations differently than investor situations, and thinking about different taxation rates and different regulatory structures that put some limitation on the larger business entities or speculative investors, which I think is destabilizing, too, for communities as well. You start to just lose your permanent population there, and I think that's challenging for communities in a lot of different respects.
Southern Berkshire County's largest community is exploring how to craft its own bylaws around short-term rentals.
Great Barrington has challenges with housing, like many communities do, and we're trying to address it in a variety of ways.
Brandy Nelson is chair of the Great Barrington Planning Board.
We recognize that there are a number of people who have purchased houses and are using them more for commercial businesses as opposed to primary residences. And so we want to explore what that impact is in our community so that we can try and make room for more housing for more people.
She says the town of about 7,000 wants to emphasize long-term rentals to provide stable housing for people who work in Great Barrington.
I think it's similar to lots of communities that have tourist-based economies. There are desirable places to live here in the community, but we're very service-based in our economy, and it's hard to have somebody who has to live in Otis but work in Great Barrington come all the way in. It'd be much more convenient if they could be here and be part of the fabric of this community.
Echoing Gordon's observation about Southern Berkshire County, Nelson describes the town's housing situation as in crisis, a claim verified by a nonprofit that focuses on that part of the Berkshires.
Whether it's folks who are eligible for our housing, which is pretty much folks who are at 60% of area median income or lower, eligible for subsidized housing, we have over 700 households on our wait list.
Jane Ralph is the executive director of Construct, which provides affordable housing support services to the South Berkshires. She has her own concerns about short-term rentals.
I think it does take housing that could otherwise be set aside for permanent rentals to really keep someone stably housed while they're working in that community. It prices that out of the market in many cases.
She says the economic impact is twofold, on the workers Nelson identified, but also on the town's businesses.
If you talk to pretty much anybody, any restaurant or shop owner in the South Berkshires, their workers are coming from quite a ways away, Austerlitz, sometimes even Springfield, definitely Pittsfield or beyond, just to be able to staff their restaurants, staff their stores. It's really a challenge for folks to be able to live in the communities where they're working. So that's hard for the businesses, and it's hard for the individual who's trying to maintain a job.
Back in comparatively urban Pittsfield, city planner C.J. Haas says short-term rentals haven't affected the housing market in the same way.
I think where we're seeing Airbnbs, you know, happen, you know, more frequently, it's with single-family homes or former single-family homes. That's a market that doesn't appear to be strained by this. If Airbnbs were cutting into what were previously apartments or are apartments now, I think that might be more of a concern.
For its part, Airbnb points to millions of dollars it says the company has brought to the region over the past year. Between Memorial Day and Labor Day, the company says around 31,600 guests visited the county, bringing $6.1 million to local hosts. It says last winter, the ski season brought 14,000 guests and $2.3 million into the Berkshires. As far as how short-term rentals impact the housing market, Airbnb policy team member Kelly Gossett says the company's activities are nothing new.
Vacation rentals, et cetera, have been part of the Berkshire community for quite a long time, long before Airbnb came along. So we're happy to provide another option for folks in a way to utilize their home and utilize their space to participate in the short-term rental industry.
So yeah, it kind of sleeps. We have this room, queen bed, the next room.
Connor and Marissa Meehan are among those folks.
We just bought this house actually in the spring, and it's got two units, the side we live on and then the smaller kind of apartment rental side.
It wasn't like, oh, we want to start an Airbnb, let's look for a property. It was like, oh, this is a great property and it has potential to do this. We can start this business and try this opportunity, and then we can live there and see what happens.
Their house, a white cottage that sits on a hillside surrounded by farmland, is in the largely rural community of Richmond, which abuts Lenox to the west and sits just southwest of Pittsfield. Connor, a musician, says they've hosted families from Europe, Japan, and across the U.S.
I'd say the majority from New York and Boston area coming out for a weekend.
Marissa, a software tester, says she didn't know what to expect when they started renting out their space.
We've used Airbnb a handful of times before we started this, just, you know, staying places. But I've been really impressed with how easy it is to use it. And also just we've had like almost 30 groups staying with us in the past 6 months, and we haven't had any issues with anyone. So I think for us, we've had a really good experience with Airbnb.
Even more so, she says it's allowing them to remain in the town they love.
I don't know that we could afford Richmond if we didn't have this set up. We were living in Pittsfield before. We were also doing kind of a rental situation there. I mean, I think we could afford it with the jobs we have, but in Richmond, this particular space, we couldn't have unless we had thought of this plan that is luckily going really well, but we were, you know, I was nervous about it, but so far so good.
Reporting from the WAMC News Berkshire Bureau at the Beacon Cinema, I'm Josh Landes.
We'll have more from our ongoing housing series coming up on the WAMC News podcast. For now, thanks to Pat Bradley and Josh Landes for their extensive reporting. And thank you for listening. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.